How are you, sir?
This is Pierre.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you. Dr. Ray the Great.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father.
I don't think you should feel helpless. You are helpless.
Doctor, I really appreciate that. That makes me feel a lot better.
You be at peace, or else I'm going to yell at you.
Trying to find a reason to speak to you. I think you're the best thing since sliced bread.
That Ray, he's something.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for all the parents out there.
They don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either.
I'm getting my money worth, I think, at this phone call.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I know she meant it as a compliment. I'm getting my money's worth for this phone call. But unless Andrew Krutchek is charging people when they call and he says, you want to talk to Ray, it's $5. You want to talk for 5 minutes, after that it's $2 a minute. Kind of like the old long-distance phone calls used to be. So her getting her money's worth, she's not paying anything. So what does that say about the value of the phone call for her? I'm getting my money's worth with this phone call. You didn't pay anything, so it's worth nothing? Sorry, I overanalyze sometimes. Well, I think I do. I'll have to think about that. Thanks for joining me here on The Doctor is In. This is Look Back Friday. It's an idea that my producer man, Andrew Krutchek, and I came up with a while back. Take previous calls, he edits them, and he cuts out my gentle playfulness, my badinage. Because somebody said, you use persiflage, you're trying to show off. You know, I do that sometimes. Sometimes I use words that I really don't know the definition of, so I can sound more photosynthesis. So I will not say persiflage anymore. He cuts out my badinage. My playful banter. And then we go through the call, and then I get to talk more. He always says 10 seconds, which means the call is coming to an end. And then I get to talk, which is what I want to do anyway. However, coming up fast, Living Right with Dr. Ray, season number 15, the first 4 episodes of our tapings. Going back to Buffalo. Wonderful there. Station of the Cross. Last time we were there was 5-6 years ago, and I'll tell you what, those folks filled up our studio audience. Oh, my. It was jammed. 200, I think, in pretty much the first show. Then after they saw that it wasn't that much fun, I think the last show we had four people, I think it was. Me, my wife, the floor director, and we had to keep moving around to make it look like we had a big audience. No, the whole time they filled our studio. So if you would like to be part of the show, because the audience is a big part of the show, they ask questions, they clap when they're supposed to, or more when they're told to or paid to. Tuesday, August 19th, Wednesday, August 20th, 2 shows. 5 p.m. and 7:15 p.m. each day. 2 shows. Father Larry Richards will be with us the whole time on the 19th. Both shows. He's there the whole time. Normally he is on tape, about 6-8 minute segment each show. But this time, he can be there the whole time. So he can take your questions and kind of elbow his way onto the stage where I'm supposed to be the star. So if you'd like to sign up, go to the homepage, stationofthecross, one big long word, .com, and click on the sign up button. Or if you can remember the number, you can call Karen, 716, those of you in the Buffalo area, you know that area code, 716-839-6117. Karen, she's at extension 100. All right. Or send her an email, karen@stationofthecross.com. Come once, come twice, stay as much as you want. We'll feed you between shows. Bring the kids. Love to have the kids there. They make it. Bring your dogs. If you have a big Rottweiler, it's okay. We've had dogs there. Anything to fill up that audience. We've even filled it up with stuffed animals. Yeah, I can't tell it from the camera angle, but it looks just like another person. All right, hope to see you. All right, enough of that. There is a very humbling Psych 101 phenomenon. I think it was exhibited by St. Peter. When our Lord gave a hint to the apostles that he had to go to Jerusalem, and he would be tried, convicted, and would die. St. Peter said, No, I will never abandon you, even if I had to die. And of course, that is our Lord's famous words, Peter, before the cock crows twice. Because the roosters generally crowed twice, once at a certain time during the night and then once toward the morning. Before the cock crows twice, you will deny you even know me three times. Of course, Peter's, no way, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to do that. I traveled with you for 3 years. So he predicted, Peter predicted how he would act. Well, psychology says we're not real good at predicting how we will act in certain situations, especially heavily charged emotional situations. It's not unusual for a couple to come in my office after one of these spouses has had an adulterous affair. Commonly, the offended spouse says, I always thought that if my spouse ever was unfaithful, that was the end of the marriage. I couldn't live with someone I can't trust. It would be broken. But they're in therapy. Why? Because he or she wants to make it work. They're kids. There's a history. There's a religious commitment. Totally unpredicted response. Living with, I could never stay married to someone I couldn't trust. And then they find out they want to rejuvenate that trust. That's not what they would have predicted. In the old act of contrition, I firmly resolve with the help of your grace to sin no more and to avoid the near occasions of sin. Why is that? Because the church in her wisdom, pretty psychologically savvy, the church knew you put yourself in certain situations even if you think, well, I'm going to act right, I can resist that, that's not going to happen to me. Famous last words. Psychologists have even done studies where they set people up. They asked them, if you were to be in this circumstance, how would you respond? And most of them said, well, I would act the right way. I would do this. And then they found a way in the study later on to put them in a similar circumstance. And what they found was a certain percentage of people did not act like they predicted. See, we like to think we're going to do better than we may do. I was listening to a homicide detective talk about the cases he's known. The interviewer said, who commits murder? And he said, now again, I think this is a bit jaded, but there is some truth to what he said. We do. Interviewer said, well, what do you mean we do? He said, because of situations and circumstances many people find themselves in who would otherwise not do this, but their emotions or their anger or their provocation results in something terrible. And a lot of times these are folks who have never had a criminal history, ever. This isn't someone who's got a rap sheet 19 pages long and murder just finally happened to be the end product. This is someone who has no history of violence. Now, obviously, I'm not implying that all of you listening would be careful. You don't get yourself in a situation where you kill somebody. That's not likely to happen. That's a pretty far step. But it does indicate that you need to be humble, like me, about being too cocksure. Maybe your better prayer is, Lord, don't let me be in a situation that overwhelms me. And of course, Scripture says that. Lord will never let you be tempted beyond your ability, and if you are, He gives you an out. But at the same time, if we're not tempted beyond our ability, but we yield before our ability is tapped out, that happens, you know. The message, be humble, be cautious about situations that could push you to do things that you would predict you would never, ever do. Doesn't mean you're a terrible, awful, evil person. It is a healthy awareness of human frailty. I'm Dr. Ray.
Resetting your password, unsubscribing from emails, printing anything. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with an auto owner's insurance independent agent, getting the right coverage for your business doesn't have to be one of them. So you can get back to more important things, like learning how that printer works. That's simple human sense.
Call Choice Insurance Agency at 734-641-4200. Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria, Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Grandy, host of The Doctor Is In, Ave Maria Radio for 20 years. I've been with them, and during that time, I've watched them spread our precious faith to anyone, anywhere. Well, also in that time, their equipment, the equipment that they had is cutting edge, no longer is cutting edge. It's kind of like an iPhone 5. We need your help. We absolutely need your help. Visit AveMariaRadio.net. You're not just donating. You're broadcasting hope. Boy, does that sound like a 60s sitcom? Picture this person just bopping down the street in New York, you know, carefree, not a worry in the world. That Girl, remember that show? That Girl. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. I'm that guy, counterpart to that girl. This is Look Back Friday. It's a variant of The Doctor Is In. Comes to you Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Taking a previous question and playing it somewhat in its complete entirety. It's kind of redundant. Repeats itself superfluously with pleonasm. Barry's calling from Virginia. Got a daughter. Just doesn't want to have anything to do with him.
I pretty much have been going to church my whole life. My parents passed away about 5 years ago, and then probably the year after that, my daughter, I can't get in touch with her. I've called her. I've left her messages, and I've talked to my other children about it. Oh, Dad, she'll grow out of it. You just have to let her, you know, figure it out for herself. But to me, I feel like abandoned by, you know, I was the youngest of five brothers. And, you know, we always kept in touch. We still do. But, you know, I feel like I've lost one of my kids, you know, and I still, I see her, like, I'll picture her on Facebook or things, but I can't, I'm not able to communicate with her at all. Don't know where she's staying. I know where she lives, but I don't know where, how to find her. It all went back to a Valentine's. I took a Valentine's to her house when she first moved out from her mom's. And I dropped the Valentine's off. She wasn't there. My kids were like, well, Dad, you can't just stop by her house unannounced and drop off a Valentine's card. And I said, why not? She's my daughter, you know. And I knew where she lived then because I helped her move in and everything. So it's just been very frustrating. It's broken my heart. It's something I just think about all the time. Can't really talk to her mom because we're divorced and we're, you know, we're not really on speaking terms.
Barry, you don't think it was the Valentine, do you?
No, heck no. It's not. That's crazy. You know, I should be able to stop by and take her a Valentine's card and, you know, say hello, you know.
How much contact?
So I was just driving.
How much contact did you have with this young lady after your divorce and when she was still a minor?
Well, she was 12 when we were divorced, and she stayed with me half the time and stayed with her half the time. So she was basically going from home to home. And, of course, she's my baby, so, you know, I always kind of looked out after her the best because she was younger, and I didn't want anything to hurt her in her future.
You have any idea why she just wants no part of you?
Well, the only thing that her older sister has told me, and that she's the only thing she could really find out is that she says that I cause her anxiety. And I'm like, why in the world would I cause her anxiety? I don't even see her. How could I give her any anxiety, you know?
Barry, each of your four adult children are very different. They're all wired different. They all have different personalities. So when we try to explain why one kid wants nothing to do with us as a young adult while the others do, it's got to be something within that kid's personality, within the way they look at things, within the resentments they build up, the insecurities, whatever it is unique to them. So if you're saying, well, the other three aren't doing this to me, so I don't understand why she's doing it. I'm the same dad. Well, you are the same dad, but the way she perceives you as a dad is unique to her personality. So you try to get a hold of her, and she just ignores all contacts. Is that correct?
Yes.
How often do you try?
Well, when she first got out of college, she would say, Dad, your phone is, you don't have a good cell phone, which that was true. My cell phone was not very good.
Ah, that's baloney, Barry. Barry, that's baloney.
Yeah, it was. It was, and I didn't realize it. I just let that go on, and I was like, well, I keep trying. I can never get in touch with you.
All right, so right after college, I'm going to have to hurry you along here because we're going to get stopped by a break. Right after college, she decided, that's it, I really don't want to have much contact with you.
Yes.
Okay, how many years has that been?
Been 4 years.
No contact whatsoever in 4 years.
No. And even at Christmas, she came by to pick up my son to go to her other grandparents' house and just parked up the street.
Wow. It would be nice to get inside that daughter's head and see what exactly is brewing these resentments. Further, my speculation would be that it happened sometimes during her teen years, because right after college. Now, who knows what kind of influences she got at college? Who knows whether she went to a counselor on campus, and the counselor said, oh, man, with all that stuff, your father really, really disturbs your peace. You need to stay away from him. Don't know, but obviously there is something going on in her. Now, that said, someone might say, well, wait a minute, Ray, you're just assuming. I mean, he sounds innocent on the phone, but who knows what kind of stuff he did. Well, that's always a possibility, but he's got three others. Well, he didn't do that to them, he did it to her. I mean, I can't know that. I'm just going to take this at face value and draw some general conclusions from it. One, somehow, somewhere, there's a whole bunch of resentments built up. Two, she's so resentful that she isn't going to give him the courtesy of saying, here's why I don't want you to have any contact with me. Three, this is hard for parents to let it go. By that I mean, maybe he texts her one final time, and he says, for whatever I might have done, I am so sorry. I hope we can reconcile someday. But right now, it's so obvious to me you want nothing to do with me. You don't want me in your life. I will respect that. I will leave you alone. I will always pray for you, love you, and hope for reconciliation. God keep you. And that's it. That's it. You make no more attempts. Oftentimes what happens is we think by making these attempts, when it's clear, leave me alone, the attempts just make the person angrier, more upset, more resentful. And maybe they know that what they're doing is wrong, so when you keep making attempts, it just bothers them further. It happens sometimes. Those of you who are in this situation, and you say, Dr. Ray, I didn't write down what you said. I want to write the text. Go to AveMariaRadio.net. Andrew Krucek, my producer man, puts each show up at the radio archives within a day or so. It's there. You know today's date. You go there and you say, okay, that was a nice template, Dr. A. Thank you. Thank you. No charge, by the way. As the lady in our first bumper segue said, I'm getting my money's worth for this call. Yeah, well, you're getting your money's worth. You didn't pay anything for this. So if that is something that you say, I wanted to do that, but I just wasn't sure exactly how to approach it, there you go. At some point, you say, I'm going to respect, and use that word, respect the way you want it to be. I won't bother you with contacts anymore, but just know I'm here. That's what you're saying. And at that point, you've got to say to yourself, well, he said this. He said, I feel like I've lost this child. Well, in essence, in many ways you did. But the one good thing about this kind of loss is there's always a chance it can come back. If there's death, that ain't happening. But this one, you don't know. Maturation in life, change in life circumstances, perhaps she will become more religious and realize she can't do this to her dad. Whatever it might be, life is always in flux. And so sometimes when you back away and you say, I'm going to give you the room you want, in some period of time, there is reconciliation. I've been doing this long enough to see it happen. Very nice to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program The Doctor Is In, The Variant, and I've gone to using that word since COVID. Used to say version. Variant is Look Back Friday. Got several calls up there, edited at the capable hands. The acumen-like intellect of Andrew Krucek. I love vocabulary. I got this thing on my email that comes, it's called Word Genius, and they give you these 10 words and they give you four possibilities for a definition, and they repeat them often enough. We're genius. It's really great. Some of them are very esoteric. Okay, sorry about that. They're difficult, very difficult. They're something you wouldn't use ever in day-to-day conversation. But some of them are things you should have in your vocabulary. Why? Why have a big vocabulary, Dr. Ray? Well, part of it is if you read and you read certain educational-type stuff or certain magazines that are a little more intellectual, these writers use those words. They do. I think they sit with a thesaurus. So given that, you know what I just did? Andrew warns me against doing this. When I came out of the break, I just spent 2 minutes talking on some subject that doesn't relate to my next call. I'll tell you what, let's take the call. 5 minutes. Okay, it's going to take me all the way to the break. And then we'll go after the break and we'll talk about it. Derek from Maryland.
I heard you talking yesterday about some of the rules around phones and kids.
Oh, yeah.
And as you were saying them, I thought, wow, that's actually what I did. And Dr. Ray is describing exactly what I did. So I have a real-life example. Our son, he's a senior in high school, goes to a local Catholic school, good young man. And we probably broke your rule a little bit, but we gave him a phone, I think, sometime around 6th or 7th grade. And it was mostly just so if he got in an emergency or needed us, or we could kind of track the phone, see where he was. If he said, hey, I'm headed somewhere, we could take a look and just ensure that he was there and safe. So what we did was a couple of things. First is when we are talking, when we're in the home or we're out together or we're somewhere, the phone better not come out. It stay in your pocket, keep it wherever it needs to be. But what would happen was our son and I would be talking and he'd pick up his phone and he'd be staring at it, reading it as I'm talking to him. And I would all I'd have to do is say, Jack, and he would look and he would realize and he'd put his phone in his pocket. And through a little bit of training, we've never had a problem with that situation. Same at dinner. If we have dinner together, we're sitting down, everybody has their phone put away. So, you know, we're there for each other. We're there to talk. And the one that I was surprised that you highlighted is in the car, we don't use our phones. And if I'm with my son, we actually really look forward to it. So he's an athlete. He might have a practice or a game, and we have to drive 45 minutes, an hour somewhere. The radio doesn't come on. The phones don't come out. We sit there and we chat the whole time, and it's an opportunity for us to catch up and talk and just talk about whatever. And sometimes it's about God. Sometimes it's about what's going on in life. Him and I actually really enjoy getting together in the car without phones. And then the last thing is once in a while we will be having a bite to eat or together and all the phones are away. And someone will say something like, hey, you know, we're going to Tampa in a couple of weeks. You know, I wonder what that place is named. And somebody at some point will go, oh, let me just grab my phone real quick and check. And I'm always like, let's not check. Let's check later. So we've tried to do a real good job. And, you know, our son is really great with it. And I know it's a lot of pitfalls that can happen. But, you know, based on this advice and kind of us implementing it, it's worked out really well.
Why do you think that you had more conversation, more interchange in the car than any place else?
Why do I think that I've had more conversation there than anywhere?
Yeah.
This might surprise you. I actually find that I have the most quote-unquote conversation. We do have a lot of face-to-face at home and definitely in the car. But my son is a pretty good, likes to write English, all those things. So, like, sometimes I'll type him a little quick message and he'll type me back and I type him back. And it's like we really connect in that way. So sometimes, while he's extremely good in terms of speaking and sharing information and talking, you know, sometimes maybe the conversation, just approach it, sometimes can be a little easier too, just shoot him a quick message like, hey, how's it going with this or that? And he'll come back to me and give me the straight dope, the real deal. And, I really like it. So, you know, sometimes if I catch him at home, maybe he's gotten up from practice and he's tired and he just wants to relax. And I respect that as well. So, you know, I try to balance it in all the different mediums and kind of meet him in the middle and where he's at. which is kind of the opposite of what my dad does, because he, you know, he loves to talk on the phone, and I get it. But at times I say, Dad, I'm just super busy, and like I can message you a couple of things just so we can stay in touch. And he really wants that phone conversation. So, you know, I try to balance it between the different people in my lives.
Well, Derek, I have one significant problem with what you said about the car and the phone. You said no radio. Now, what if you're in the car between 1 and 2 p.m. Eastern time?
I have to admit I have turned on Dr. Ray a few times. It's tough keeping everybody's attention. I love Dr. Ray. My son and my wife, they probably need to be listening a little closer, a little longer. And I mean that in a fun way. I think they would enjoy it, too.
Where to begin? He sounds like a very responsible dad. And it also sounds like the kid is kind of mature. And it also sounds, I'm going to make this assumption, that he's a boy. My experience has been boys are less pulled to be ever phone connected than the girls. And there's research for this. I mean, girls are just naturally more communicative. They're more social in a lot of ways. They connect at emotional levels more so than boys. These are all generalizations. And he did what was wise. He had a number of limits put on the phone. However, there's some comments I want to make about this. I'm going to have to leave it till after this hard break coming up in about 30 seconds. Because he said he gave it to his son in the 6th or 7th grade. So the kid was 12 or 13 when he got the phone. I've seen surveys that say that parents, the bulk of parents, first of all, the phone age by 12 or 13 is the norm. But the bulk of parents do not put any kind of restrictions or safety packages on those phones. And I'll talk about that a little bit. And I also want to talk a little bit about limits are a nice start, but they're just the beginning. And I think to have limits might guarantee less of a chance of misuse or personality pull toward the phone. But they're not foolproof. I'll talk a little bit about that on the other side of the break. They don't have whistlers in these high-class orchestras, you know? You think you'd have them. I mean, it's got violins and stuff. It's kind of routine. You don't ever hear somebody playing the jug in one of these orchestras? When you used to watch Andy Griffith and the Darlings and the old man, the pop, the padre, the padrone of the family played the jug. Okay, I just got done talking to, I got done vicariously talking to Derek from Maryland. And he talked a little bit about the rules that he put on his now senior in high school son's phone. And he said something interesting. He said, we gave it to him in the 6th or 7th grade because we wanted to be able to contact him. Want to know where he is, where he was. That's pretty much one of the main rationales, if not the top rationale, for giving a phone early. And the kids know this. The kids will play it. They will say, but, you know, we have practice, and I don't want to be stuck at practice, and I won't be able to call you. All of that. Now, it's fascinating because not more than 15 years ago, for the most part, I don't know how people navigated practices that went over, But that said, if it were solely for safety, a flip phone, a burner phone, a phone with limited minutes, a phone that would only have contact 3, 4, 5 numbers, that's not acceptable. That is totally unacceptable to a kid. As a matter of fact, I have not yet seen a child say, oh, okay, that's good. Yeah, all I need is a flip phone. That's good, because I just want to be able to contact you if practice runs over. No. They want the latest, greatest. So it makes one question a little bit, does it not? That maybe that isn't the only rationale. That said, he talked about parent-imposed limitations. There are phones you can get that are protective in and of themselves. There's a Wise phone, I think it's called. A Gab phone, I think, if I'm getting this right. That indeed, that limit, or the parent can simply stop apps or internet. So the kid has what looks like a smartphone, but in fact he can't go too many places unsupervised. The world is not in the palm of his hand. But for whatever the reason, a lot of parents don't do that. I don't know if it's laziness. I don't know what it is. Or you can do this. You can pair that phone to your device. So anything that goes through that phone, whether it's a text, whether it's a search, whether it's an internet spot visit, you'll know it. There you go. Doesn't take much to do that. If you don't know how to do it, go to one of the local phone places or something. They'll set it up for you. Or get some 6-year-old. They can do it. Of course, 6-year-olds, you got to watch, because they know how to get around it too, so be careful. There are many things to do you can't do. Because I will tell you, the number one single most parent sabotaging thing is a phone, by far. No question, not even close. And it's interesting, I saw a thing on TV some years ago where they were talking about the top 50 inventions, and I think it might have been the past century, that had the most ramifications for life. And the number one at the top was the smartphone. How it radically alters how we socialize. It brings in social media, which in and of itself has all kinds of ramifications. It brings in, you can visit any place in the world, listen to anybody in the world. Even if you spend time on the phone that's relatively benign, it sucks up vast amounts of time. And Derek was saying, we don't allow the phone to encroach upon normal social interaction, like driving, dinner tables, certain times at visiting. Many parents don't do that. They simply don't do that. All you have to do is go to the restaurant and watch. The sad thing of it is the parents are on their phone too. So what used to be family connecting time around a table with food is now, well, we all just pursue what we're interested in. I'm in the airport a lot. And again, okay, I can understand part of this because I do it too. But I look around and there are really few people, well, okay, I shouldn't say few, a minority of people talking to other people, even the people they're with. They're on the phones. Now, I'm there by myself most of the time because I'm traveling for business. And so, yeah, I will scroll my phone to see what the news is. I hit the phone a lot for news, find out what's going on. That's the prime reason I'm there, catch up on emails and take care of business via that comes through email. Nothing comes through the phone anymore. Calling the phone with a voice. So I do that. But I just noticed, I was sitting the other day, and I just looked around me. And I would say conservatively, 70% of the people were just glued to their phone. Now, I'm sure there's explanations, but the phone is just a high-powered device for altering the way we socialize. Okay, so that's enough of that. But the bottom line message here is that even if you have limitations on the phone, consider making it much safer for your child than it is. There are ways to do this. And all too often, unfortunately, parents have to get burned first before they realize, I better do something. This is Dr. Ray.
You're listening to Ave Maria Radio.
Ave Maria Radio.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Saint Jose Maria Escriva says that we are called to light up the pathways of this earth by being sowers of peace and joy. This comes from being aware that we are sons and daughters of God. On the road of life, though, we find dangers, but God walks with us every step of our life, pouring out the gifts of His Holy Spirit upon us. Our Lady is our companion, like GPS in our car, connected to the cloud and bringing the latest updates to help us navigate our journey and get out of traffic on the way to the eternal kingdom. We don't want to get into family fights on our way to God's vacation destination, but we should be these sowers of peace and joy. We shouldn't accept substitutes, accept only the authentic identity of being His children, His sons and daughters. Let's grow in happiness and bring peace to those around us. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Hello, Steve Ray here from Footprints of God Pilgrimages. Want to celebrate some amazing anniversaries this year in France? We'll visit Normandy Beach to celebrate our heroic military for the 80th anniversary of D-Day. Also, the 100th anniversary of the canonization of St. Teresa of Lisieux. Join us this October for our Saints and Shrines of France and a visit to the newly renovated Notre Dame Cathedral.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
Joining me here, Dr. Ray, let's go to one final call so I can get in a few comments before I am so summarily ripped off the air. Let's go to an anonymous dad from South Carolina. 19-year-old is using tetrahydrocannabinol, which is the main, most potent active ingredient of the many, many active ingredients in marijuana. Haven't struggled with that. Is he living with you?
Yes. So here's the situation. My son, he's 19 years old. He's in second year of college, but he's going to this college close to our home, so he's staying with us. He's the third one. He's getting a couple of A's here and there, but mostly B's and C's. I know he's not giving the best effort to school, and I think he's playing too much video games. But the main problem I have with him is that he's been using this THC infused thing. I'm not really sure what it is, but I know he smokes it. And I've been talking to him about this stuff for many, many years now. And a couple of weeks ago, I told him, hey, you need to stop that. That's bad for your brain. You need to stop it. But he claimed that that's not bad, that it doesn't cause any harm because it's legal. Blah, blah. So he's not convinced that this is bad. And I told him I didn't want him using that stuff anymore. So now what he does is he's hiding to use it. And I know he's hiding. I know. But he doesn't know that I know.
Dad, you said you've been trying to get him to stop smoking dope for years?
Well, no, for about 6 months. But
okay.
Looking back, I think he's been using it for at least a couple of years.
Okay.
I just didn't know at the beginning.
All right. And you're also saying that he's kind of just drifting in school, that his grades are at risk. Is that the case?
Well, he's barely passing.
That's pretty risky.
He said he wants a degree, but he doesn't put the effort on it.
All right. So I don't know if I just
take him out and send him to the Marines. Or,
who's paying for school?
I am paying for it.
Why are you doing that? I'm not telling you not to. I'm just asking why you are.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm doing it, and I'm questioning that myself. Maybe I should just tell him, hey, I'm not going to pay for this anymore.
Well, think about it. Think about it.
Now,
he's not putting any effort in. In mm-hmm. South Carolina, is vaping with THC legal or not?
You know, I don't know, but I know he's buying it from this vape store near our home.
Okay.
He doesn't know that either, but I know that that's where he's getting it from.
All right. Well, you know, as a parent, you're very much allowed to say, here's my terms. If I'm going to pay for your college, here's my terms. No more of this, and I want to see your grades at least at C level, or that's it. That'll be your last semester I pay for. You're permitted to do that as a parent. What's stopping you?
Well, so I thought about it. The question is, if I do that, then I'm going to have him at home doing nothing.
Well, wait a minute now. Wait a minute. What do you mean he's going to be doing nothing? Are you not allowed to set conditions for his living at home, like get a job?
Yeah, I mean, but I don't know. So I was thinking maybe saying, hey, you have to leave at home and get your own job and support yourself then.
Okay.
What if he doesn't do that?
What if he basically says, okay, I'm not giving up the THC and I'm not putting much more effort into school and eventually I'm going to flunk. So you're going to lose your money, Dad, because some of these courses you've already paid for and I'm going to not pass them, so I won't get credit. So then at that point he says, I can't go to college without you paying, so I'm coming home. And then you say, okay, if you're going to come home, you're going to get a job, you're going to pay rent. And he says, yeah, I can't find a job. What are you going to do then?
Exactly. So that's where I'm stuck.
You're not stuck. Well, you're not stuck. You're basically in a point where you have to make some decisions. And the reason you're saying you're stuck is because you don't like probably what he'll bring upon himself, which is he can't live there. Now, that's up to you. I'm not telling you what to do, but that's up to you. I'm always wondering why so many parents are so afraid to say, okay, you're legally an adult. Here are the terms for my help. I want to help you. But if you're not going to cooperate, then this stuff stops. But I'm telling you, my friend, I would say less than 50% of parents can do that. Actually, far less than 50% of parents. And there's a lot of reasons for it. Okay, Andrew, I'm seeking your permission on this one. Typically, we have a rule when we take calls that if you're on the line at the end of the program, you call back and you're first up all the way out to Armageddon. In this case, I'm looking at the clock here and I've got basically 2 minutes. There's so much I want to say about this call. So, Andrew, let's take this call and we'll move it to a future look back. We'll play it again. We'll move it. I'll make a couple of comments now, but I'll make much more in-depth comments later. The theme that kept coming up here with Dad was that he simply rolled with what the son was doing. He was vaping THC. And Dad is right. It's dangerous. This new THC ain't good. I've seen people go into psychosis from this. And these psychoses tend to be very, very resistant to resolving. Very. Now, in this case, Dad says, I keep telling him. He doesn't agree. So at age 19, he's gonna do what he wants. That's what he says. I'm doing what I want. Now, Dad said, he's playing video games and he's not putting much effort in school. How long will Dad continue to support him? We didn't have time to chase this, But the number one reason that the parents just keep rolling with this kind of irresponsible, and I dare say, self-destructive behavior, is they're scared. They're frightened. Because if they take action, and given the kid's level of irresponsibility, there's a pretty good chance he's going to do some real stupid things. And he's going to end up in some real unfortunate circumstances. No job, no place to live. And so the parents are saying, well, I got to choose the lesser of two evils. I'm going to let him live here and vape and do whatever he does. So much more to say about this. And I want to say it. So, Andrew, you hold that one. That'll be a look back, look back. I'm Dr. Ray, and I appreciate so much this chance to do this show with you. Hope to see you in Buffalo when we tape Walk with Our Lord.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.